Take control of your tarp and upgrade your manual tarp system to electric with a Roltec electric tarp conversion by AgriCover Inc. Save time and increase productivity by tarping on the go. This system operates with the convenient push of a button, keeping your driver inside the cab and out of dust, rain, and harm's way. Upgrade your existing tarp to electric today to stay protected, clean, and on schedule. For more information or to find a dealer near you, call 800-233-4655 or visit RoltecElectric.com.
Welcome back. It's Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr in the North Dakota Corn Council studio, but we are heading over to the United Soybean Export Council, USEC. Jim Sutter, U.S. Soybean Export Council CEO.
Hi there. How are you doing, Mick?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. You and I have chatted. You came to North Dakota last winter to the Northern Corn and Soy Expo, and sure appreciate the work you've done for soybean exports.
Well, it's a pleasure to connect, because North Dakota has become an important part of the U.S. soybean industry with certainly the production that they have brought online.
All right, and you were the first person to say that, okay, China is done wonders for the soybean market, but a couple of years ago you told me that USEC had boots on the ground in China for a decade before we sold a single soybean to that country.
That is exactly right. The first boots on the ground appeared there in 1982, and it was 1995 before the first sales were made. And those sales, as you can imagine, started out at a very small and low pace. So it took time before they ramped up. I mean, people look at China today and they kind of assume, wow, it's been a big buyer all along. Well, it wasn't that long ago that they were not a buyer at all.
So looking forward, are they, you know, obviously the soybeans they've needed is to redevelop their protein, their hog herd, which is decimated. Yep. Now, going forward, are they going to be more self-sufficient and not look to us for soybeans, or are they going to be a continued regular customer for years and decades to come?
Mick, I believe that they will be a regular customer for years and decades to come. I think given their population and given their, you know, their land mass and their ability to produce what they need themselves, I think that they will continue to rely upon the world market. And I think they have made a strategic decision that soybeans are something that they want to import. In my opinion, they did that because soybeans are grown in multiple places, North America, South America, so they have choices. And I think they will continue to be a buyer in years to come. We see them, we project that their imports will continue to rise at some pace. They're rebuilding their swine herd. You mentioned that it had been decimated. They're pretty quickly building that back. And I think that's had a lot to do with the strong soy demand we've seen going into China this year.
Now, South America is obviously one of their regular customers also, or China is a regular customer of Brazil and South American countries. But
right.
Do you look at them as a competitor or a partner?
Well, I would say both. Clearly, we compete with them, but the world needs the soy that both North America and South America produce. And I think, you know, what I just said about China viewing, liking the situation of having multiple sources, multiple origins that they can choose from in case of a crop disaster in one place or a political issue or something like that. I think it's good that there are multiple sources. So we just want to make sure we have a level playing field in terms of how we compete with them. And in terms of being a partner, we work in a group called the International Soy Growers Alliance. And Monty Peterson, who we talked about, has participated in meetings of that group, where we have growers from Argentina, from Brazil, from Canada, from the United States, plus a couple of other smaller countries. And they come together and talk about issues that are maybe more on the pre-competitive side. Things about how do we make sure we have market access? How do we make sure that these importing countries are properly viewing biotech soybeans? Working on those kind of things, I think we can be very well served if we get our heads together with the other major producers and go to the major importers. I know when we've been in meetings in China with groups from the International Soy Growers Alliance, or ISGA as we call it, it's quite a powerful group when you go and sit down with the Chinese and talk with them. And that's then, you know, 90% of the world's available supply of exports you can have a good conversation, and they can't play one off against the other at that point in time. But that's on pre-competitive things. When it comes to actually, you know, who wins the sale at the end of the day on a pricing situation, that's when the exporters in each country and, you know, they kind of battle it out and do that on a day-to-day basis. But we do work together and we compete with them. Good question.
All right. Moving forward, I see yesterday South Korea tendered for non-GMO soybeans for 2022 delivery. Obviously, they're looking forward.
Yep.
U.S. and Brazil, 90% of the world's available soybeans. Is non-GMO a small part of it or a growing part of it?
Well, that's interesting. I would say non-GMO is a, I think I would label it, it's an important part of the overall picture, because for some consumers around the world, that's what they want to buy. And when I, one of the things I like to talk about the U.S. as being is a great supplier of choice. Because whether a buyer around the world, whether South Korea wants to purchase non-GM soybeans with certain specifications, maybe IP, maybe traceable, maybe not, maybe in bulk, however they want to buy them, we've got great U.S. suppliers, farmers that will grow them, and exporters that will export them. And likewise, we've got great, obviously, lots of farmers that grow what we call commodity soybeans, and exporters that ship, we ship those out in, you know, in large vessels, lots of them these days. Our exports are flowing out at a big pace. So the U.S. can supply choice. Now, in terms of your question about is it growing or not, I think the demand for non-GM seems to be growing somewhat. There seems to be, you know, more marketing campaigns with products being non-GM. So they're obviously, if you're going to sell a non-GM product, you have to have non-GM raw material. So I think that is growing. It's still a, you know, relatively small percentage compared to the total, but it's an important one for the people who want to buy that. I'm so glad that we have U.S. suppliers that are able to supply it to them in a good way.
But it all comes down to trade, obviously, and eliminating unfair trade practices was one of the principles of the current and soon to be previous administration. I guess going forward, do you have any educating that you feel needs to be done for the incoming administration?
Well, I think you said it well. I mean, that needs to continue to be a priority. And I think good progress was made in various agreements around the world. The China Phase One agreement did a lot of that. The enhancements to the USMCA agreement, the Japanese trade agreement, and others that are being worked upon. And I just can't stress enough how important it is that our USTR and USDA continue to work together with ag interests to find the countries that are the right targets for these free trade agreements and continue to get them negotiated. One of the things we're working on hard, Mick, is trying to make sure we have a diverse set of markets. We talked quite a bit about China, but we don't want to be a China-only supplier. We want to be supplying a wide range of countries around the world. I think that's the best thing for our farmers and our export industry. And if we have free trade agreements, we see that as these free trade agreements get put together and we get them in place, we generally increase our exports to those countries. We've got good examples in Colombia, in South Korea, others we could go through, but we don't need to go through a long list. But I think these free trade agreements are important. And we would hope that we can see some new free trade agreements, perhaps in Southeast Asia, you know, Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines, those kind of countries, or other places around the world. So we would encourage the new administration to just work very hard and continue on the path that the current administration has been on in terms of getting these trade agreements negotiated and in place. And it's so critical that they try and frame them up and make them be a win-win agreement, because if they're too one-sided, then nobody wins with that or nobody will really follow through with it. I'm a big believer we need to try and have these free trade agreements be mutually beneficial, so both sides want to follow through and really use them to their advantage.
Visiting with Jim Sutter, the CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Jim, as you look over the shoulder of the Pacific Ocean, we're now on the outside looking in of a huge 15-member nation trading part, the RCEP. Any concern about being on the outside?
Right. Well, it's interesting. That's a great question. You know, I think it's good that there is an agreement put in place that will dictate the rules that all of those countries trade by. The U.S. already has agreements with many of the countries that are in the RCEP. And so hopefully they will just, you know, kind of bring the rules more into compliance. People will be understanding, becoming part of that world trading system. And it can just morph into their trade relationship with the U.S. will also be strengthened. You know, I think anytime there's a big trading group like that put together and we're on the outside looking in, yeah, I think it has to cause a few questions. And maybe we say, you know, what role could we eventually play in that? But I don't know what terms we could enter that agreement on or how that would work exactly. I think I'm sure that will be on the list for a new administration to be thinking about. But what I know is those are important countries for us to be trading with. And we just want to make sure we have good trading opportunities, whether inside a deal like that or outside.
Okay, good relationships with all of those countries. Well, the administration...
Absolutely, that's critical.
Yeah, job now is to get the administration's job now is to get this pandemic over with and keep our economy going strong. Man, we've got Dow up there close to 30,000. And a weak U.S. dollar, does the weak U.S. dollar right now, that puts all of U.S. soybeans on sale. That's a good thing?
I think it is a good thing. And, and we've struggled over the last few years. Not only did we have some trade issues, but we also had a very strong dollar to contend with. So I think the weakening of the dollar, now we don't want to see it collapse, but the weakening of the dollar a little bit has been beneficial. It does help put our commodities on sale. And I think for U.S. farmers have suffered with the dollar being at such record high levels. I think it has helped them. And we've definitely seen soybean prices move up, and the weakening of the dollar is probably one of the reasons, maybe not the main reason, but one of the reasons. We spent a long time kind of resting at 10-year low price levels. So fortunately, we're back up to kind of middle of the range of the last 10 years prices. So much better than being at those 10-year lows.
Thank you very much, Jim Sutter, U.S. Soybean Export Council CEO, for the work you do and will be doing in the future for soybean growers. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mick, and thanks for the work you do communicating. I sure appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Likewise. Back at you.